All right, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining Citizens Climate University. Tonight's lesson, or this afternoon's lesson, depending on when you might be watching this, is Lobbying 401. We're going to talk about some advanced lobbying techniques and how to handle difficult situations this evening. All right, so first up tonight, we have our California coordinator, Natasha Reddy. Natasha, I'm going to give you just a few seconds here to tell everyone about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Ricky. So I first learned about CCL about 4 years ago when I heard a talk by Dr. Jim Hansen. And shortly after that, I founded our Silicon Valley North chapter. Before CCL, I received a PhD in oceanography from Stanford University. And I followed that up with some postdoctoral work studying climate sciences at NYU and NASA. And then I've been in this role as CCL's California State Coordinator for about a year now, and I am loving it.
Great. Thanks, Dr. so much. And then we also have another pretty smart guy, Mr. Don Adu. He's our, he's our District Director, Southeast Regional Coordinator. He's got a lot of different titles. But Don, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself for the folks who haven't had a chance to meet you yet?
Sure. And so I found CCL about a little over 6 years ago and had the opportunity to start the first group in North Carolina. I spent 10 years in the biotech and pharmaceutical industry before coming on full-time with Citizens Climate Lobby as the regional director for the Southeast. So I live in Durham, North Carolina, and I get to support all of our actions throughout our nine-state Southeast region.
Great. Thanks so much, Don. That's me here. My name is Ricky Bradley. I'm not nearly as smart as those two guys, but I'm a group leader for the Dallas North Texas chapter and IT director, or really web designer, web developer for Citizens Climate Lobby. I've been with CCL since 2012. Started the first person in Texas to be a part of CCL, and it was just a fantastic learning experience. And as we all know, you learn and grow as you become an accidental advocate. It's been a pleasure. It's been a really interesting ride. So I'm going to talk real quick about our agenda for this evening. Tonight, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about some situations that may arise during a lobby meeting and talk about some good, bad, and better responses to those, right? And some of it's a little lighthearted, so we'll be joking around a little bit tonight. We've got some common temptations that we'll talk about, some things that we'll want you to avoid. And, you know, how to handle hot button issues. So, you know, we're all very passionate about climate. We may be passionate about other things that are tangentially related to climate, like maybe nuclear power or fracking or something like that. So we'll talk about how to handle those situations that might push your buttons just a little bit and how to do it in a way that can continue to move the relationship forward. We'll also talk about some other difficult situations and handling pushback from folks that you think are like-minded or people that you feel that are on your side but maybe give you some grief, and try to handle that situation in a way that, again, builds the relationship. And so we always want to do that. So let's get started tonight with Don and Tasha demonstrating how to overcome some really common objections to carbon fee and dividend, and doing that with some bad, good, and better responses.
Awesome. Thanks, Ricky. Tasha and I are going to go through some examples of some of the most common opposition you'll get while lobbying. One is, what about China? Or problems with the word tax? Or the disbelief that our policy could ever be revenue neutral? Each of these topics has the potential to derail your meeting. Hopefully, after Tasha and I demonstrate a bad, good, and better response to each of these common problems, you'll have a better idea of what you might say and do when you run into these situations. Remember this: stay focused and respond to what they say and hear, not what you think they should hear. For this session, Tasha and I will take turns being the member of Congress and a CCL volunteer. Then Ricky will debrief each section. First, Tasha is the staffer who will raise a concern regarding China and India. So what about China and India, Tasha?
Scott, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
Well, a lot of Republicans fail to acknowledge what China is doing. So obviously that's a pretty bad response. Here's a good response.
John, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
China and India are important. The good thing about our policy proposal is that no matter what they do or don't do, we have more jobs, increase our competitiveness, and the air and water in our district will be cleaner. So that's a pretty good response, right? It sounds like I've internalized that laser talk. But here's an even better response.
Don, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
That's a valid concern, Tasha. Would you tell me more about why that matters to you?
Sure. We see it this way. If the U.S. is the only country eliminating coal jobs and coal as an energy source, then China and India are free riding at our expense. And we can't stop global warming by ourselves.
So what I'm hearing is that if there was a way to bring China and India along, then it would be much easier for this office to support climate action. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, but there are a lot of other issues we would have to overcome as well.
I can certainly appreciate that, Tasha. Getting back to the China and India concern, I had the same concern when I heard about, how Reagan used a border adjustment to bring other countries along when combating the hole in the ozone layer. Would you like to hear more about what Reagan did to eliminate the free riders?
Great. First of all, I can say that, Tasha, you are so good at repeating the same question over and over. And doing it in a slightly different way every time. That was perfect. All right. So let's just talk about a couple of things about that. So notice that Don's better response, what he did at first is he started with an acknowledgement and it was followed by a question, right? He said, that's a valid concern, Tasha. Would you tell me more about why that matters to you? And so then again, you know, it's we do internalize laser talks and we all have our short, you know, objections to what people say, but asking that question, trying to draw out more information, that's the better response. This led Don to discovering that Tasha's underlying issue or values was that China or India would be free riders, right? So our responses to Tasha as a member of Congress, you know, her comment was, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal. And so our responses have gone from, right, well, a lot of Republicans fail to recognize or acknowledge what China is doing, a bad response, to, you know, it's important to what China and India are doing. The good thing about our proposal is that no matter what we do, we increase jobs here, we help our air and water, right? This is what we think they want to hear. So keep that in mind. This is what we think they want to hear because it's what we think about, right? But it's not necessarily what their concern or their value is. And so by asking questions, we can find that common ground. What we really discovered was the real issue there was free riding. So notice that even the bad and even with the good response, we tell them what we want them to hear. It's only after we ask those clarifying questions that, you know, to and listen, right? Did we really find out what their underlying concern is? And that is free riders. And then we're able to pivot into asking them, do they want to hear some more information? What we think about that. Now, our next topic is the taboo surrounding the word tax. In this example, Don's going to play the member of Congress that keeps asking the same question over and over. And Tasha is going to play the CCL volunteer.
Excellent. Thanks, Ricky. So we'll start with the bad response. Oh, what you're talking about, Tasha, is really just a tax.
It's a fee, not a tax, if all the money goes back to households. So that's a bad response. Here's a good one.
So what you're talking about, Tasha, is really just a tax.
Former Secretary of State Schultz says that if the net proceeds are returned to households, then it's a fee and not a tax. He said taxes pay for the government and that this fee is not doing that. Not only did Mr. Schultz serve four administrations, he was also the chairman on the economics department at University of Chicago. So that's a pretty good response, but here's an even better one.
So what you're talking about, Tasha, is it's just a tax.
I've heard that same concern. I've had that same concern, Congressman. I'm a fiscally conservative gal myself. Would you like for me to tell you what I've learned?
Sure.
Have I ever told you that George Shultz is on our advisory board? He is President Reagan's former Secretary of State and Secretary of Treasury.
I think I knew that.
Secretary Shultz tells us that if we offset the fee revenue, minus any administrative costs, with corresponding rebates to households, then we are not technically raising revenue to fund government programs. What's your take on that?
Sounds like semantics to me, but there are a lot of semantics in government.
I agree. You know that there are some other economists, like Romney's former economic advisor, Greg Manchu, who believe that we need to put the cost of reducing emissions onto the balance sheets of the producers. That's what our fee is designed to do.
All right, fantastic. So let's notice here, let's just debrief that situation quickly. Again, the situation was, and we hear this quite often, right? Sounds like a tax is what we're talking about. Now notice that Tasha's better response, again, started with an acknowledgement and sharing of the congressman's concerns. She said, you know, I've had the same concern myself, Congressman. I'm a physically conservative gal, although I don't think Tasha would ever describe herself as a gal.
Maybe not. That's what acting is for.
Exactly. It's method acting. I'm a physically conservative person. Would you like for me to tell you what I've learned, right? And so in this example, Tasha agreed. And so this led Tasha to discovering what Don or the member of Congress's underlying values or issues were or are. And Don's response to the comment, you know, what you're talking about, Tasha, is really just a tax, have gone from, no, it's not a tax, you know, telling someone they're wrong, you know, it's a fee, not a tax, and getting in a battle of semantics to throwing up a validator to someone, you know, someone who is probably an influencer. Hey, have you, do you know what Secretary of State Shultz says? Again, both this bad and even this good response are really us just telling the member of Congress what we think they want to hear. And so, you know, we should recognize and appreciate that a couple of things here that, you know, for Republicans, revenue coming into the government is a tricky issue, especially with their base. When they're really ready to hear what we have to say, it would be really good to cite some of the gains, from the Remy study. So what you've done, you know, what you can do is really move the conversation from something that scares them, the word tax, to a positive message, something that really resonates with them, like job creation. Can I tell you what I've learned about this money coming back to households and what it will do for your district? A really great way to pivot away from their concern about it being a tax. Our next topic is the concern that carbon fee and dividend will never be revenue neutral, right? So we've heard this before from our members of Congress. So in this example, again, Tasha is going to play the member of Congress, and Don's going to play the CCL volunteer, and then we'll stop to debrief again.
So we won't vote for this because we don't believe it could ever truly be revenue neutral after it gets through Congress.
Okay, so what you're telling me is that we can't trust you with our money. So that's obviously not a great response. So here is a good response.
We won't vote for this because we don't believe it'll ever truly be revenue neutral after it gets through Congress.
Yeah, we hear this concern sometimes. I like what they did in British Columbia. What they did in British Columbia was that if all the money doesn't go back, then the finance minister loses part of her salary. Also, I like what Bob Inglis said about this. If we let this fear prevent us from passing legislation, then we have given up on this experiment we call democracy, and we might as well invite the king back. Okay, so that's a good response, but here's a better one.
We won't vote for this because we don't believe it could ever truly be revenue neutral after it gets through Congress.
Yeah, we hear this concern sometimes from offices. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, I'm sure the Democrats will want some of the money for extending Social Security, and the Republicans will want to pay down the debt. So what we will end up with is revenue from higher energy prices paying for other things.
So it sounds like transparency is really important to you. Is that an accurate assessment?
Absolutely. I see way too much waste and fraud.
Excellent. That's a big concern for us as well. There are some examples of how some similar situations have worked in other places around the world. Would you like to hear more about those?
Of Great. Thanks so much, guys. And so again, let's stop and debrief that. And you know, one thing I think is probably the most underrated question in a lobby meeting, and Don asked that in this example, can you tell me a little bit more about that? Right? I mean, what a genius little question, because it just gets them talking. So, you know, we're all used to hearing things and talking points. When you ask that question, you're asking them to go beyond the talking point and to really explain what they mean by that. Because when we hear those talking points, we may have a misperception in our mind of what they're really saying. So that question is a perfect question to ask in that situation. Again, notice Don started with acknowledgement in the better response and followed it with the question. And this led Don to discovering really that what we think the member of Congress underlying issue or value here is transparency. So we went from a bad response of, you know, basically we can't trust you, or you're telling us we can't trust you, to offering a validator, you know, someone like Bob Inglis or a data point. Yeah, data point that's worked in BC. Give me one second. Let me get through this debrief and we'll take question. Or the last part does to, you know, to asking questions and discovering what their real concern was. Did someone have a question? Go ahead and tell us your name and tell us the question. No? Maybe not. I thought I heard somebody with a question. Okay. Well, we'll still have time for questions here in just a few moments. So we're going to go ahead and move to our next section here. In this section, we're going to have Tasha and Don, and less of me. We're going to talk about moving past some misconceptions.
So the important thing to take away from this demonstration isn't the content, but the process. When first presented with an objection or concern, our natural inclination is to come back with a fact. However, remember what Dr. Hao and others have taught us. You must connect on shared values before someone is ready to accept what you have to say. In order to determine what's the underlying value behind their statement, we ask questions to draw out more information. We establish common ground by sharing their concerns and connecting ourselves to that value. We ask for permission to proceed so they are ready to hear what we have to say.
Absolutely. Thanks, Tasha. There's also a huge misconception among some people, including some of our own volunteers, that we face climate denial in congressional offices all the time. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, I have never been in a meeting with a member of Congress where we have discussed the science of climate change. However, we understand that potential for dealing with a desire in Congress can create a lot of anxiety for us. So we're going to demonstrate a bad and better way to manage the situation. But I do want you to know that this rarely comes up. So I'll play the member of Congress here. So here's a bad response. Oh, you know, Tasha, the satellite data shows the planet hasn't warmed in 15 years. So why would we do anything about this?
Well, 97% of peer-reviewed science papers say that it's warming. So you are ignoring the consensus of science. So now what you're doing with that sort of response is starting an argument. So a better response might be something like this.
No, you know, Tasha, the satellite data shows the planet hasn't warmed in 15 years. So why should we do anything about this?
I understand the science can be confusing. We've got satellite measurements, surface measurements, ocean measurements, and more. It took me a while to get my head around the science. If you'd like, we can set up a separate time to discuss the science of climate change. We can even try and get a climate scientist from a local university to be here. However, we're here today to discuss a policy that will grow the economy, create jobs, save lives, and significantly reduce emissions. And that is something that I care deeply about. So even if we are not on the same page with the science right now, I think the policy's other virtues, such as job creation and saving lives, warrant your consideration. Would you like to hear about the policy?
All right, thanks, guys. So that's, again, as Don mentioned, a situation that doesn't come up much. I think I've only been in one meeting in 5 years where we've gotten into a real big discussion on science. But I love what Tasha did there. You know, we might only have 10 to 15 minutes, especially as a member of Congress, right? We don't have a lot of time. for a meeting to get derailed into the science and having to go through that discussion might not be the best use of our time when we're trying to introduce a policy to a member of Congress. I love the way basically she said, hey, let's talk about that later. Right now, let's talk about this policy. Perfect. So two key things to remember. She wasn't confrontational. She acknowledged that science can be confusing, right? You know, Tasha's a climate scientist, but not many of us are, right? But she extended a hand by offering to bring in an expert from the home state or, you know, in the local area. And that's much more comfortable and less combative, and it leaves the door wide open for the breakthroughs. It's just better way to, it's a better to help them find a way forward on their own terms, right? Not forcing them, you know, our terms on them. And, you know, I always ask this question is, you know, if a member of Congress ended up, you know, supporting our policy or introducing our policy just for the economic benefits and didn't believe in climate science, would we care? I don't think so. I think we'd be pretty happy about that because it's if the policy would get introduced or supported. So let's pivot now, Don, to talk about a few key takeaways from this last section.
Sure. Thanks, Ricky. So the first takeaway is remember, don't lose your mind. It can be challenging sometimes. But the important thing is really to assume good intent. Oftentimes their concerns are genuine. And even if they're not, you should treat them as being genuine. And acknowledge and identifying that concern really helps here. You can eliminate the innate bias we have to blame them for being evil, wrong, or disingenuous. Then we can not only change the context of the relationship, but also create the condition within which we can develop a productive relationship with them. And it can be hard. I have been in the meetings with members of Congress where folks have, staffers have given incorrect information. And there's a great tendency to immediately correct them, but that doesn't help build the relationship. So make sure you let them finish their point and ask for permission to proceed. Once they've said what they have to say, they're much more willing to listen to what you have to say. There's some common temptations, you know, that you do want to avoid. You don't want to be promising what you can't deliver. An example of this would be that CCL would change his position. Or overstating our case. An example of this is promising with 100% certainty that the majority of their constituency will come out ahead. And we also don't want to ask for less than what we want. We've discussed in other trainings that you want your primary ask to swing for the fences and only go to your supporting ask when you know clearly why the primary ask is being rejected.
That's such an important point, Don. And so I think it's a good time to stop and take some questions here, especially on things like, you know, when you do the secondary ask and, you know, because it is something that is really important to our meeting. So if you have a question right now, what we'd ask you to do is a reminder, you know, everyone's been muted. So to mute and unmute yourself, please use the microphone icon in the lower left-hand portion of your screen if you're online with us, or press *6 on your phone. Tell us your name and tell us your question, and then, you know, it can be on anything that we've just discussed or anything about a meeting. We got time for about 5 minutes or so for questions.
Hi, this is Dick Barron from Ann Arbor, Michigan. How do you deal best with the member of Congress that wants to talk about some other issue that they're involved in and keeps going on about that as you're watching the clock tick down?
It's a great question. And in fact, it's something we talk about in just a little bit here. We do talk about this, or we get to something similar, but the thing is, Dick and Tasha and Don, feel free to jump in here. You just got to find that natural point where you can bump in and say, oh, I appreciate you working on that, and I understand why it's a concern for you. You know, since we only have a few minutes, could we pivot, you know, do you mind if we pivot back to our policy and why we're here today? They'll understand. They pick up on that. Like, you know, you've traveled all the way to Washington, D.C. to talk about a very specific thing, and they usually will pick up the hint there. Don, Tasha, have you ever faced that situation or have any thoughts on that?
Hi, Ricky. Yeah, I thought you described that really well. I would just say that really make sure you can make the congressperson feel like you're hearing the point they're trying to make, and then they'll be more likely to want to switch topics to what we want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the second that. Just give them the time. Let them talk about it, and then thank them for the work they're doing. And then you can say, and that ties back to what we're talking about in terms of climate change because of this. you know, the kind of the upside of climate change is that it impacts everything and everyone. So regardless of what they're talking about or they're excited about, we can tie it back to climate change.
Yeah, that's a great point. But you know, Dick, sometimes, you know, you'll just get someone that wants to talk and talk, and you just have to, you have to listen, because, you know, it's just like being on a first date. You know, you don't want to come off looking bad yourself. So it's a difficult situation. Hopefully you can get some more time back in the district as well. That'll help out. Who else? Who's got another question?
I have a question. This is, go ahead. The other person, go ahead. Okay.
Real quick. So an offer and a question. The offer is, when I was asked by a member of Congress about the revenue neutral, you know, it'll never happen, I said, that's why we need you. And he was appreciative of that. The question is, in Donald Trump's interview with the New York Times, when asked about human cause for climate change, he said, it depends. I'll quote, he says, it depends on how much it costs our companies. So I choose to think about denial as grief, right? As a natural reaction, right? I don't have $800, my transmission's not broken. So my question is, what do you think about that approach? And what do you think about quoting Mr. Trump?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I would, and so to me, when anyone brings up the point of, you know, this is going to cost too much money, I like to ask them to tell me a little bit more about that. Because what I usually find out is that they think it's going to be a lot worse than it is to deal with this issue, especially if we do so in a revenue neutral way and how we can actually create jobs and grow the economy. So to me, personally, I love it when it gets to that point, because then we are talking about solutions, and we're talking about, we're on common ground. We're talking about different ways we could do this. And I can always compare and contrast the efficiency of carbon fee and dividend or any market-based approach with regulation or any of the other approaches. So I don't mind that so much, but I usually what I'll do is I will ask them a question about this. So tell me more what you think about that. I mean, what we hear a lot here in Texas is, you know, this is going to kill the oil and gas industry, right? And I'll ask them, well, tell me more about that. Why do you think that? What do you think that looks like? And we start having that conversation, and I can share with them, you know, what it shows in the REMI report, that it's not going to kill the oil and gas industry. It's actually going to help them sort of pivot. And so that would be what I would suggest. Ask them another question about that. Really dive into it. Go past that talking point. Don, Tasha, did you guys have anything to add to that?
Sure. So yeah, climate denial can be really tough, but it's my impression that it is really starting to fade away as the truth comes out in more and more situations and to more and more people. And then my other comment would be, you know, CCL has always been focusing on Congress and not the executive branch. So, you know, our mission methodology doesn't change much depending on, you know, what Trump says about climate.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And how is Senator Morley to cooperate with a member of their own party, regardless of who? I think I'll write like 500 times, tell me more about that.
yeah. But I think you also, you had a great, when your initial example, and you said for revenue neutral, you appealed to them to be better and to take up the challenge of fighting for, you know, what we believe in. I think that's a great way to do it as well, right? That's why we need you in Congress, to make sure it's going to be revenue neutral. So I think that was fantastic. We've got time for one more thing. Jim, you had a question as well, and then we'll move on. And we still have time for questions at the end.
Okay, Jim. What do you do when the member of Congress is bored? We've talked with him or her before. They understand our position. They might go part of the way. They're very familiar with climate issues. And we bring up carbon fee and dividend, and they start looking at their watch. They've heard this before.
Now, I'm never in that situation because I'm in Texas. I'll let Don and Tasha handle that.
Well, I would say that it depends whether or not they're in the Climate Solutions Caucus. And if they aren't, you could ask them, if they're a Democrat, ask them to find a Republican to join, which is not an easy thing to do. And so I would hope that they've
been there, done that. He's bored with that one, too.
We've bored with that one? That.
Huh?
Okay, does Don have an idea then?
Yeah, I've got a member of Congress that's kind of in that position. He says, you know, he wants to join the Climate Solution Caucus, but he really believes that Republicans are never going to come to the table on this issue. So and you know, of course, we have more Democrats than Republicans, so he's just kind of in a holding pattern right now. So one of the things that we're going to do, we meet with him in June, is ask, you know, what can we do for you? You know, I mean, ultimately, if they're sitting there and they're kind of taking as many steps as they can, then you know, what is it that they want to see in the district? You know, or is there a group of folks that they would like to hear from on this issue, or is there something tangentially related that we can help work for them on? I mean, if they've done everything that they can do, and they kind of feel like, well, here I am, I can't do any more, I understand where you're coming from, but my hands are tied. Okay, well then let's see what we can do for you, and kind of pivot that a little bit.
Jim, I would ask, has your member of Congress, are they committed to revenue neutrality?
No.
Right. No. I think that's probably been a good discussion on revenue neutrality and how that really benefits would probably be, I mean, that's just a suggestion. And as far as some secondary asks, most people don't know this yet because we're just about to put them out, but the Climate Solutions Caucus has just asked us, given us another set of secondary asks that they would like to see us pursue. We're going to be publishing those on community and communicating those out to all the conference attendees as well. So that might be the basis of some discussion as well. But I agree. I mean, if you've had 10 discussions with your member of Congress about carbon fee and dividend, they probably don't want to hear too much about that. So you might want to pivot into some of the things you can do to further the relationship.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm looking forward to hearing those. Our congressperson, this is a major issue for him, but he's not on board with carbon fee and dividend.
Yeah. So let's keep working towards that. Appreciate the comments and the questions, Jim, because I'm sure if you have that question, there are other people on the line tonight that have that question as well. So I appreciate you sharing that. Why don't we go ahead and keep on track, and then we'll have time for some more questions here at the end. We'll go ahead and move on now to talk about some hot button issues. And these are, again, things that are probably polarizing for either side, right? So no matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, or you know, it really doesn't come along ideological lines. Some people are just polarized on this issue because of what it presents. So why don't we go ahead and start with that. Tasha, this is, again, we're going to talk about how to keep focus in these situations, and we'll let you get started here with the fracking issue.
Great, thanks, Ricky.
Yeah.
So in this next section, we'll discuss some ways to handle a few hot button issues like fracking, nuclear energy, and partisan polarization. These issues can elicit strong responses from either side. Don will go over some suggested good responses in Republican offices, while I'll give you some suggested good responses in Democratic offices. What we don't want you to do is be inauthentic. You can't say anything that does not work for you. They'll smell it and it won't work. So notice how we always try and redirect the conversation back to the reason for our visit.
Oh, thanks, Tasha. So when talking about fracking in Republican offices, you may hear natural gas burns cleaner, so you people should be championing the shale revolution. So a bad response to that is we already know that natural gas is way worse than coal because there's so much leakage. A better response is it's true that natural gas burns cleaner than coal. If natural gas can be extracted without significant methane leakage, then it would be better than coal. We believe all fuels should be accountable for their costs. Would you like to hear how our policy will do that?
So in a Democrat's office, you may hear something like this. Aren't you opposed to fracking? A bad answer would be, heck yes, I participated in 2 fracking protests last year. A good answer would be, personally speaking, yes. But as an organization, CCL is fuel agnostic. We think if you include all the external costs through a steadily increasing fee on carbon, then within 10 years, fracking will no longer make sense economically. What do you think about holding all fuels accountable for their costs?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thanks, Tasha. So now we're going to pivot to nuclear power. Oh, in Republican offices, you may hear nuclear has to be a part of the conversation. It must be on the table. A bad response is, why don't you talk to the folks at Fukushima? Oh, a much better response is, as an organization, we don't take a position on nuclear power. We take a position on one thing, having the burning of fossil fuels pay their true cost to society, letting the market determine what's viable or not. The economists tell us that with the carbon fee and dividend, the percentage of nuclear in our energy mix stays about the same as it is now. Would you like to hear more about that?
So in a Democrat's office, you may hear, your report shows that nuclear will increase under your plan. A bad response would be, well, we got to get our energy from somewhere. A good response would be, well, I personally have my own concerns about nuclear. The National Academy of Sciences says it's safe. As an organization, we don't take a position on nuclear. We take a position on one thing, having the burning of fossil fuels pay their true cost to society. How do you feel about the growth in renewables with carbon fee and dividend?
Awesome. Thanks, Tasha. Well, let's pivot from here to conservative greenwashing from Democratic offices. So in a Democratic office, you may hear the Republicans on the resolution and the Climate Solution Caucus are just greenwashing themselves. A bad response is, you're right, I'm wasting my money coming here. Much better response is, that's a possibility. But you know, all too well, in politics, words matter, and they can haunt you for the rest of your career. I don't think these Republicans made the decision to associate their names with these efforts lightly. And I think they believe there will be consequences. Further, at CCL, we take the approach that until no one is surprised at the next Republican who joins, then there's still work to do changing the expectations about what it means to be a Republican in the United States. As an organization, CCL wants to again become the country that can pass the Clean Air Act with only one dissenting vote in Congress and have it signed by a Republican president. If we can turn to that America, no one will be surprised by Republicans joining these groups. I believe, though, we don't get there by questioning their intentions. In summary, if the conversation gets off topic, respond to their statement and bring it back to carbon fee dividend by asking them a question. Oh, next we're going to go to review some advanced lobbying skills that will gracefully get you out of bad situations. First of all, know that these situations can happen to anyone, so don't misattribute blame to yourself. Working with people is inherently risky. There's only so much you can get out of some meetings, and worry about what you can control, not what you can't. So let's discuss a few situations and the best way to handle them. Oh, Tasha's going to talk about an angry CCL volunteer.
It's you guys in Texas with your oil companies who are stalling and making things worse. Your team lead can handle this by saying, obviously, we're very passionate people, and we're working very hard to try and get something done in time. You were just saying that, and then you can let the staffer continue with their point.
Now, every once in a while, you'll run into an angry staffer, but this is really unusual. But a bad reaction is getting angry back or getting defensive. You can handle it by acknowledging their concerns, repeating it back to them so that they know that they're being heard. Let them know that you're not there to put them in a no-win situation. And tell them that what we're doing will make it easier for them to support our bill. Another concern is kind of going off topic, and we touched on this a little bit earlier. We want to wait until there's a breaking point, acknowledge their position, and then pivot back to why we're there. We want you to use your experience. You know, you don't want to cut someone off in mid-sentence, but do take the opportunities when you get them. We've all come across great talkers in our lives, and a lot of members of Congress are great talkers.
So sometimes you'll get pushback from like-minded people. You'll meet people who agree with you on the climate and who understand that we need to act, but they may favor another policy or have reservations about carbon fee and dividend. So how should we handle that situation? So first of all, show appreciation for their work. Acknowledge that we share a common goal and acknowledge the worthiness of their plan or ideas. It's far too easy to get upset with people on our side who don't agree on our exact approach. The slight differences should never let us forget that we're on the same side. So refrain from negativity. Don't bash their plan or their idea. They're proud of them. Tell them that we appreciate their idea and their work to address this important issue. We just think for us to get done what we're trying to get done, we need to keep all of our focus on one thing.
So in summary, let me say, I know that you can feel a lot of anxiety or pressure because of the fear of failure to be strong. That's a normal reaction. So practice your laser talks ahead of time, and it's okay to say that you don't know. As long as you lead with appreciation and respect, and you leave with the opportunity to have another meeting, consider it a victory.
Great. Thanks, Don, Tasha. So that's the end of our lesson for tonight. What we're going to do now is open it up for questions. I think we have some questions in the chat window, so we can just start with those. But again, you have been muted. After we go through these first two questions in the chat window, please feel free to jump in. The first question we got from Claudia, and I think we sort of addressed this when we got to the part, Don, where you talked about the polarization in Congress and nothing's going to be able to get through. The question for Claudia is, how would you respond to a Democrat member of Congress or staffer who say, you know, Congress is broken and we'll never get anything this good anytime soon? And I'm asking Don and Tasha to respond to that. Go ahead. What would you guys say there?
I mean, for me, go ahead, Don.
Okay. I guess I would go back to the Climate Solutions Caucus and point out that, you know, Congress people are working in a bipartisan manner, and that, you know, it's a really good sign, and that we should expect more of that in coming years.
Yeah, I would do exactly the same thing. Look at the Republican climate resolution in the U.S. House and the Climate Solution Caucus in the Senate. I think that that's a really good way of saying, you know, we're making progress, that this is something that is achievable.
Yeah, and I think it's important to also to just to add on to what you two were saying. I think it's important to acknowledge their feelings in this situation. You know, there are a lot of people on the Democratic side who are feeling a little bit hopeless right now. So showing them and talking to them about the good things that are happening. You know, tomorrow, I can't tell you who, but, you know, two more members of the Climate Solution Caucus are going to be announced tomorrow. I mean, this keeps happening. This is building, right? And so we're going to be up to 40 as of tomorrow. So, right, you just need to keep showing those Democrats that there are Republicans who are taking the stand here. And, you know, quite frankly, it's a politically risky stand for a lot of them, but they are doing so. Jeff asks, do you recommend using the Office of Tax Analysis on carbon fee and dividend as well as REMI to back up revenue neutrality and similar issues? I'll take this one because I know I put together the supporting ask stuff for Danny. I would absolutely yes. And in fact, on our Lobby Day toolkit on community, there's a direct link to the Office of Tax Analysis. What they did, just for those who aren't familiar with it, the Office of Tax Analysis is a office in the Treasury Department, and they took a look at a carbon tax and also at different distribution mechanisms. You know, how would you return the money, what you could use the money for in different situations. And a full return to households was part of their analysis as well. And so we have it, our total analysis of that. So with my member of Congress, Jeff, that is what the conversation's about. We're gonna go in and talk about that because they're not on board with carbon fee and dividend, or, you know, I don't know where they are with that, and they're just not really totally on board yet. So we're gonna go in and show them another analysis in the Office of Tax Analysis. I think it's a perfect thing to use. So do you guys have anything you wanna add to that, Don or Tasha?
I don't have anything.
No, I think that's great. Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. Now let's take some questions. No more questions in the chat window. So again, star six, if you're on the phone, press the little microphone icon. If you're online, it's in the lower left-hand portion of your screen. Tell us your name and your question.
Ron Dries in Houston, Texas.
Hey, Ron.
I was at a Union of Concerned Scientists presentation at Rice U in Houston yesterday, and I talked to one of the presenters who said many congressmen are afraid of supporting anything because the Koch brothers will use their dark money to shoot them down. Do you have any response to support congressmen who may feel like this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with this, and Don, Tasha, you can jump in. I would think that's the real easy way to look at it. I tend to take the view, and again, this is just our CCL philosophy, is to see the best in others and to really try to think, okay, if someone's not supporting us, it's not just because they're being bought and paid for. That's sort of the cynical view of things. And the way I come across that, Ron, is that I've been in many offices, and you know, my very first meeting with a member of Congress, I was just perplexed. Like the staffer got it and understood what we were talking about. And I'm like, so aren't you guys like, you know, I kind of asked early, I don't know, I think it's a bad question, but so weren't you doing anything about this? And I'll never forget, she said, we do what our constituents ask us to do. And you want to see my inbox? And she showed me the inbox on her computer. And everything in there was about guns and Obamacare, right? There was nothing in there about climate change. So you're like, what do you think we're going to focus on, right? So that really drove home the point to me that I didn't understand the context within which they operate. I had no clue at that point. And so it was really an eye-opening one for me. So I don't think that we can just assume that, absolutely, you know, is money an issue? Absolutely it is. Is it the issue? I don't think so. I think citizen voices are really what's the most important thing. And what we have to do is get enough of us to overcome that money. You know, we always talk about we're not betting we're betting the ranch on relationships and citizen advocacy. And we know if it's a money thing, yeah, we're definitely going to lose. But, you know, that's just my thoughts on that. Don and Tasha, what would you have to add to that?
Yeah, I agree with Ricky. I mean, at the end of the day, right, the Congress people have to listen to what their constituents are saying. And I'd like to have the optimistic viewpoint that, you know, that they will do that and not just listen to money.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about, you know, why do representatives care about the money? Well, they use money to help finance their campaign, which means they're using it to get out the vote and influence, you know, hopefully influence folks to vote for them by running TV ads and radio ads. All this costs money, and they do that so that they get votes. Well, when we go into our member of Congress office, especially as a constituent, we're going in offering the vote. We're basically going in as the wholesaler. We cut out the middleman. I mean, really, we're saying, hey, look, you know you need our vote, and this is what you need to do to get it. So I think that that's a really good way to think about how money plays in this aspect. You know, it really comes back to the constituency and what they want. And actually kind of brings me back to the point that we were talking about earlier with Jim and his representative, who's, you know, hasn't really gotten on board with carbon fee and dividend, but does want action on climate change. You know, go back, just like with the Republican offices, we got to go back to the base. You know, look at one of the things we're doing is we're looking at our some of the most liberal towns in his district. And we've got the two most liberal towns voting on a resolution supporting carbon fee and dividend this next month. So hopefully we're going to be able to go back to them and say, hey, check this out. I know you're a little concerned about this, but check it out. Your far left base that comes out and supports you all the time is supporting this legislation. So kind of looking at it again, whether Republican or Democrat, coming back to the constituency and the folks that they're reporting to.
Yeah, and some of that climate polling may really help in that situation, Ron. To point out to the climate polling, even, you know, in places, I'm in Dallas, so even, and I used to live in Houston, understand, you know, the polls do show that, you know, there are a lot of Republicans that do support this policy as well too. So, you know, I would bring it back to that, but yeah, I understand the cynical view. I would just say it's probably best if we try to stay away from, because if we have that, if we believe that, and we truly believe that, and we go into a meeting, it'll show. It'll show in the way that you present yourself, in the way that you respond to their questions. People pick up on it. So try to take the generous view as much as you can. I know it can be difficult, but try as much as you can to do that. Susan Bazoo, I hope I'm saying that correctly, in the chat window, and we'll let Tasha and Don, why don't you jump in and answer this. Is it ever okay to interrupt a staffer who is monopolizing the time? Maybe we suspect it's due to keep us from talking. You know, how could you do that tactfully?
Yeah, that's a sort of it depends situation. I mean, in general, we don't want to interrupt, especially if it would be really impolite to interrupt. But at the same time, if they're going on forever and ever, we would want to try and steer that conversation back towards what we would like to talk about. A lot of times there are little pauses when people are talking that you can just kind of elegantly maneuver into the pause and steer the conversation.
Yeah, and keep in mind, remember that we're running a marathon here. It's not a sprint. So if you get into a meeting with a member of Congress that just gets off topic and then just eats all the air in the room, or the same issue with the staffer, that's okay. We'll be back to meet with them in August. We'll be meeting again with them in November. I mean, they're not going to be able to filibuster us the whole time. And this is a long-term deal. I mean, at this point, I have now outlasted a lot of staffers and several representatives. So just keep that in mind. And even if you do leave feeling frustrated, know you'll get another shot.
Thank you, Sue.
Hi, this is Alex Eminette. Can I just raise a question?
Yeah, sure, Alex, go ahead. And Alex, where are you calling from or joining from?
I'm in Montana. But 2 years ago, I lived in Washington State, and my congressman, I went to lobby in D.C., and we asked him, who would you like us to talk to in the district? And he was really glad we asked that, because he gave us a list of names. And then we went and talked with these people, and they were representatives of the fruit tree industry, which is a huge industry in his district. And that set him up for him being able to go talk to those guys about the carbon fee and dividend.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic question to ask. And you can do that at the end of the meeting. At sometimes in the past, we've asked, who do you work with across the aisle? Who do you, work? Who do you like to work with across the aisle? What could we be doing more of in your district? Who should we be talking to? It really cements the fact that we're there as partners. I love that, Alex. Thanks so much for bringing that point up. Steve says in the chat, as an FYI for everyone, the Years of Living Dangerously episode that was talked about in the CCL Weekly Briefing, it's now on YouTube. And there are some examples of what a lobby meeting might look like, and it's worth a look. I would also point out that last week's lesson, Lobbying 301, was all about what a meeting actually sounds like, taking you from beginning to end. So it's worth a listen as well, not to tout or plug our own stuff there. So we'll talk about that next week. Thanks again, Tasha. Our California coordinator and Don there in the Southeast. We so appreciate you guys being on tonight and helping us and sharing your experiences and the feedback on the questions.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Yeah. Jeremy. Thank you guys. Appreciate it so much. Everyone have a great evening, and we'll talk to you next week.